This is Secrets to Win Big, your roadmap to sustained growth. Brought to you by Arjun Sen, founder and CEO of Zen Mango, top brand growth driver and a former Fortune 500 executive who has been called one of the most marketing intelligent minds in the business. Find him at zenmango.com. And now, here's your host, Arjun Sen.
Welcome to Secrets to Win Big with Arjun Sen. Today, I have a smile on my face because I've been looking forward to this conversation for a while. My VIP guest today is Mike Domish. Before I introduce his formal bio, I want to talk about how our worlds collided, interacted, everything else. My first ever CSP summit at NSA, called NSA National, Mike was the mastermind guru for our group. And for 2 days, Mike took us on a journey of a lifetime. And what was important was, in a journey where most of us feel we know it all, and our biggest thing that we do not know what we do not know, Mike very kindly and gently, but sometimes decently assertively, pushed me like a big brother or a baby brother. And I really am grateful. So now, that's my Mike I'm talking about. Now, the way the world knows Mike, Mike Domish is a Hall of Fame speaker, author, subject matter expert, educator, certified speaker professional, and is the founder of the Center for Respect, Inc. I really want to get into the origin of that because that really intrigued me. He is devoted to his life to the mission of creating a culture of respect for all. You have seen Mike quoted on NBC, Dateline, Forbes, Wall Street Journal, and other renowned publications worldwide. In 2022, Mike was inducted to National Speakers Association's Hall of Fame. But not only that was wow, but what was very important was he's the first expert who was inducted, who was focused on respect in workplace to ever inducted to this amazing, esteemed organization. Mike, truly a pleasure, and welcome to Secrets to Win Big.
Well, thanks for having me, Arjun. Thank you for the beautiful introduction and your comments about the mastermind experience. So every time I see you, a smile comes across my face. I just love your soul and your energy and what you bring to the world.
Thank you, sir. So, Mike, first I want to go to this whole focus on respect in the workplace. With your amazing mind, you could have gone 50 different directions. This is the passion you found, passion you chose, and more importantly, you're living this. What made you choose this?
Yeah, this is not something growing up you think I'm going to be a speaker, one, and I'm going to be a speaker on respect. And what happened for me, it's a personal calling. When I was 19 years old, I received a phone call from my mom telling me that my sister Sherry had been raped. And that phone call would change my life forever in that moment. And soon after, one, I saw the strength and courage of my sister and in survivors, and I realized I wanted to do something to stop this from happening. So about a year later, within a year, I started speaking out. And so at the time I was 20 years old, this is 1990, this topic was not being discussed in schools or on campuses, and I was trying to break through that. And that's where it all began. The journey was very challenging. I had to step away for it for about 8 years because of where society was at. And in 2002, came back to it full time. And that's all I've been doing since. And along that journey of working with schools and the US military to prevent sexual violence, some people came to me and said, can you do this for corporate? Now, interestingly, they weren't looking for sexual harassment training. You can get that. That's very online, very legalese. And I didn't want to do it. I said, that's not where I want to go. I don't want to go into legalese programming. They said, no, do what you're doing in these other spaces, but for corporate. Help us build this culture of respect that you're really founded in. And that's what happened. And so we started doing programming for corporate, saying, hey, what are the little things we all do every day? You know, interrupting somebody because we're excited, not recognizing how that's shutting another person down, right? Not responding quickly to someone, at least with, can I get back to you in 2 days? Just saying something and making someone feel like they're being ghosted or they're not important. these little things that create cracks in the foundation of respect and how to really solidify that foundation. And that's where it all came from. It came from a very personal calling. And same with the organizational name you asked about in the intro, you brought it up. I wasn't the Center for Respect for the first 17 years. I was the Date Safe Project because we were so focused in this realm of dating and intimacy. And we recognized, wait a second, that doesn't open the doors we want to be reaching across the board. It opens some of the doors, but not all the doors. And I was at an event. And I thought, what would I rename myself? And I actually thought, the Center for Respect, this is what I'm founded on. Everything I do. We have clients that say, Mike breathes respect. Like that, that's how they refer to it. And that is how I view my calling. And weirdly enough, in 2018 and 19, nobody in the world had claimed the Center for Respect. And so we were able to, and we transferred our name over and we went from the Date Safe Project to the Center for Respect. And that's how we got to where we are today.
And, you know, respect is such an important thing in the corporate world. One of my amazing mentors had taught me that if you and I start working together for the first time, day one, we need to give each other 100 units of respect. Trust, I can give you less and you can earn more. But respect has to be, because both of us have been given the same right to the oxygen and the lights on this planet. We deserve that from each other. And you gave examples. And as I was listening, I'm like, Mike, don't give me more. Like, I'm looking at things I already do. Like the simple thing, not listening to somebody and interrupting. Like the thing you talked about is the crack is you send me an email. I can tell you, Mike, can I get back to you in 3 days? Like at least I acknowledge you, okay? And the word that really hit me is the cracks. You know, to me, it's the cracks. It doesn't have to be a big violation. It's the small things that hurt. That is very, very powerful. Okay. So tell me a little bit more about challenges people face in organizations. And how do you get us to the other side?
Yeah, well, we're going to start with the cracks because you brought up something really important there. Many organizations do not tackle assertively or intentionally the issue of respect. They think that's not a front plate burning issue for us, but they don't realize that all the other issues they have is because of a lack of respect in some form or fashion. And they also think, well, they see things like the Me Too movement. And they think we don't have those monsters in our organization because they don't understand the crack concept. They believe that, oh, there's got to be a monster for us to have a problem. They don't realize it's these tiny little, tiny, tiny cracks that start to become bigger and wider and longer that make the huge, huge difference here. And your mentor was brilliant in saying, I will start with 100% respect and I expect you to start with 100% respect, because very few people are taught that. When I put the quote up on a screen in front of a corporate organization, and the quote says the following, respect is blank. Everybody yells earned. And then we put up a screen that goes failed. Because the moment I have to earn your respect, this is a game of power and hierarchy. I have to do something to be of value to you, which means what you said earlier would be incorrect. I'm here because I've been chosen, because I'm the right person. You're not treating me like that. You're treating me like I've been chosen and I'm still not good enough. I've been chosen to be in this position and I have to do something. And what's horrible about that is that when I get into leadership, I will have been taught that system. So when somebody gets hired that I'm responsible for, I'm going to treat them the same way. And this is all a game of seniority, hierarchy, power games, instead of going, of course, I'm going to treat you with respect. You're my teammate. And people go, no, you earned. No, you said the right thing. You earned trust. You earn admiration. But even if you lose all my trust, I will treat you with respect. That's actually what separates us as human beings, is the ability to say, I will always treat you with any respect, regardless of what you do.
So it's like, if I was working for you and I failed on every ground, you have every right to fire me. But even that day, as you are mentioning, I still will earn your dignity and respect.
That's right.
Highest level, because we both are human beings, have equal ownership to this planet.
Yeah. And somebody who cares about their people will tell you firing is one of the hardest things to do because I care about the person, right? If somebody's cold hearted, firing is not difficult. because you aren't thinking about the value and the dignity of the person in front of you. But the one thing we can do when we are firing is lead with that. Because I care so much about this person, this is not the right place for them. I mean, that's the honest other view of this. When you treat people with any respect, you recognize a mismatch and can recognize not only is this not right for our organization, it's not right for them because they're not going to thrive here.
So as organizations go through, at the end, some care to make it a better workplace. Some do it because it's a better business. But both people do the same thing. I want to understand how making it a better workplace makes it a better business also.
So years ago, now going back about 8 years ago, Harvard Business Review did a study on what was the number one influencing factor on employees. Now, this went into productivity, well-being, profitability, everything. The same answer came across the board, respect. Now, what's wild about that, Arjun, is nobody jumped on it. Nobody went, wait a second, how can this be the number one issue across the board? Which means it's costing corporations billions of dollars and they're not even acknowledging it. If I feel respected, I go to work and I'm way more productive. If I feel respected, I don't take the sick day that I'm not really sick, but I'm having an emotionally sick day because I don't enjoy my work and I don't enjoy what it's doing to me. My stress is way down. My health is way up, which you also know, that means health insurance isn't being used or used at a much less rate of expense to the company. And then, of course, if I'm that productive, profits are clearly going up because I'm much more of a problem solver through this process. So on the bottom line, respect is massive. But because it's been called a soft skill, it gets ignored often. When people forget, these words like soft skill is another sign of disrespect. It's saying that the human soul is not an important matter in the workplace. And so we have to step and go, wait, if we really understand respect, we don't even use soft skills, hard skills. We don't use those words. We use essential skills. And if you told me an employee being productive is essential, then I'm going to care about that employee's well-being. And I'm going to care about the human being behind in that employee.
Now, as I'm listening to you, I'm just thinking, how and why do we act differently versus how we act in our home? Let's say for a second, I am the CEO of a company, you work for me. When I invite you and your family over to my place, I'm going all out to make sure the beverage you're drinking, the moment it goes down, I get, like, why can't we be the same person? And the second, I think when you talked about, when I don't feel respect, I start becoming a 60% Arjun, a 50% Arjun. I become cautious. I'm the guy who is not going to take the shot just at the end of the game. I'll pass the ball to somebody else because I'm playing not to fail.
Yes.
Very different. And if a whole team plays not to fail, trust me, we will all fail. And I think we were talking about it's the productivity. And also, it's not fun. Like when if we came to the mastermind and that day, Mike walked in and said, guys, I have done that. I'll tell you, these are the 10 do's and the 99 don'ts. Okay. I will take a picture of that. And then I'm not going anywhere. Like I'm just staying away from the 99 don'ts. So I don't make a goofball of myself among my peers. So, and I really feel that I want to go back to that mastermind experience where even though it was easy for you and our amazing Meredith to tell us what to do and not to do, you allowed each of us to be who we are. Arjun left being inspired to be a better Arjun, stronger Arjun, not Meredith, not Mike. And that was the power of the respect we got there. So really appreciate that.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And I actually think it's essential for any leader or coach to understand you are not cloning yourself and your people. You are not making many yous. That's not what the world needs. The world needs all of their brilliance because their brilliance is what you don't have. So I need everybody else's brilliance on my team to help me see what I don't know, to help me think of things I wouldn't think of. And you brought up something essential. If I am not being respected, most people shut down and or become defensive, right? And these are not healthy workplace environments. So what happens in that case is when somebody brings up an idea, everybody shoots it down because we've been taught to be negative. right? So that's not going to work. Oh, I've tried that. But, and by the way, I've made this mistake myself. Most of us have. When we're not the right mindset, we go negative on people. And it is horrible to problem solving. And so one of the biggest things we teach companies is when somebody brings an idea that everybody's heard before and it hasn't worked, usually the whole room's like, we've tried that, right? And they shut it right down. We've tried it a million times. And we say, what if instead of degrading or dismissing, you explored? And you said to the person, wow, you know what? We've tried that like 40 times, but we never get over this one issue. How would you get over that issue? With curiosity, not with how would you get over that, you know, which is a defensive approach, but to lead with curiosity. And in the mastermind, you might remember one of our guidelines that day was not to tell anybody you have to, you should, you better. The language was, would you consider the possibility? Right. And that language then means I'm just sharing this possibility with you, Arjun. You can throw it out if it doesn't work for you, but it's not me going, you got to do this, because that's a different energy for the whole room. It's almost I'm forcing you into a box, and that becomes defensive. Then I start to go, well, that's not going to work because you're forcing it. And everything about respect falls into one word, choice. Mm-hmm. When somebody feels they are living a life of choice, they feel respected. I have true choices. Mm-hmm. In the corporate world, we tell people one of the greatest tests a leader can assess their situation with is how many people say no to me and how often. If my team rarely says no to me, this is a massive red flag that they don't feel safe. Because when people feel safe to express themselves and to really bring all their ideas, they don't fear saying no to you because you created such a safe space for them to say no. And we teach, when people do this, they'll be like, oh my gosh, I'm the worst sinner of that. I'll say to my employees, will you do this? Yes or no? They'll say no. And I'll go, well, we need it done by 5. Well, then why do you ask? So you were going to force me to do that either way. You should have walked in and said, due to an emergency, a fire situation we have, I'm going to give you permission to put everything else aside you have on your plate. This has to be done by 5. That would have been good leadership versus will you? Oh, you said no. Yes, you will. You literally removed choice from me versus giving me a command, which I can understand. You're my boss. That's got to happen sometimes. But this plane of manipulative choice is very damaging and harmful. So we tell people, go back to your team and say, I've recognized in the past that I've asked you for a choice and then not given you one. I'm going to stop doing that because I want you to always be able to say yes or no to me without guilt or shame. If I ask you a question and give you a choice, it is your choice to make. And empower, it's going to take time because they're not used to that, but empower people to really have choice in the workplace.
I was snorkeling on my face because you are making this a safe place for me to share something which maybe I should not, but I'll do it anyway. A client of mine, a super CEO, I was brainstorming with him one time, and on a similar area, I pushed him with a one-liner I read somewhere. I'm sorry, I don't remember, so I'll say anonymous. This one-liner was, if I don't challenge you, I weaken you. Okay. And the CEO loved that one line. A few weeks later, his amazing assistant called me and says, Arjun, we all want to kill you. I'm like, I'm glad you guys are at want, not planning to. So she said, let me FaceTime. She FaceTimes, and the CEO, taking my amazing wisdom behind him, had put in font bigger than anything, like as big as maybe the Hollywood sign, that text. So imagine, Mike, you walk into the CEO's office, behind him is font bigger than you, which says, if you don't challenge me, you weaken me. Because people were reading, you challenge me, you weaken me. Okay. So it was my job to get through to the CEO by saying, sir, it's not the words, it's your actions that matters.
Yes. Yes.
Get to a serious side. Okay. As we go through.
But I want to pause. Can we pause there?
Go ahead, please.
Because also, it's just a phrase on the wall that can almost come off as a dictator's like motto versus, hey, it's much more powerful for a boss to get up in front of a room and go, I messed up in how I've led, than that motto ever was behind them. Because the motto is forgetting one thing. You didn't create a safe space for me to challenge you. So there's this model that says, challenge me. When in the past, when I've challenged you, you've shot me down. There's no way. Now I think you're a hypocrite. So it actually does harm, because I sit there going, that doesn't match because of what you said. The behaviors didn't match. So that doesn't match. That should never have shown up on the wall unless I have 2 years of a track record of that. Then it shows up on the wall and people go, well, of course that's you. That fits. That makes sense. So that's really important for people to recognize, just putting the posters up, just putting the slogans up, which we love to do in corporate America. It's usually done way too early in the process. First, we need the human connection and acknowledgement of the mistake and the journey moving forward.
It's the human connection, and then you move forward. Love this. So I want to go to a difficult area of corporate world where we check boxes. The corporate world, as we get more global, we are getting more diverse. And even though it's a very serious issue, I'll give you a very simple example. My wife and myself, we come from the same part of our same country, but two different states, where even our alphabets are different. It took me years to figure out when I ask her, do you want something? Sideways is yes to her. Vertical is no. That is, for 4,000 years, she and her ancestors have done that. It's for me to appreciate and bring that into my life. Okay. So I'm just giving that example because we are so different in the workplace. And that whole crack sometimes could be knowing, sometimes could be unknown.
Yep.
So how in the diverse world, Mike and your leadership team are helping us live respect to a higher level?
So when we look at the greatest athletic coaches, coaches in pro sports that have made differing personalities work together as a team, almost always it's because the coach is very intentional about understanding, I do not coach a team, I coach individuals which each need different approaches than the other. And the greatest coaches will be tough on this athlete over here and be very gentle on this athlete over here. And both athletes will say it was exactly what they needed. And had they got the other, they would have shut down. It would not have worked. But the coach understood that's what they need. And the failure in most organizations is to learn our people, really learn them, not just what are their strengths. That's what organizations love to know. What's their strengths? Or, you know, give me the grid for how their personality works. Like they're a robot, right? Like, oh, they're personality A. So because of this, they're going to be this, this, and this. Versus, you know, what I found out about Aaron, Aaron is triggered. Notice I know Aaron's triggers. I've asked these questions. Aaron is triggered when this happens in the workplace. When somebody talks to Aaron this way, that's way more important than Aaron's A personality, because this is deep to Aaron's soul of how Aaron's going to work and hear things. Aaron compliments, wants to hear this. What matters to Aaron is work quality, is her family or his family, their family. And now I know how to compliment this person. Most leaders have never asked their people, what matters most to you if you were to be complimented? If something were to trigger you in the workplace, it's happened in the past or here, and you feel safe enough to share with me, would you share so I can do my best to create the safest environment and supportive environment for you? These are deep questions, and it really allows you to learn about the person. And that allows you to adjust to exactly what we're describing. Somebody could say, well, I tend to do the opposite because of my culture than what America does. People get mad at me and that triggers me. That allows me as a leader to go, could you give me an example? And they go, well, when I do this, it means yes. Right? Oh, well, thank you. You're right. I would have never guessed that. So thank you. Now I know. And learning our people.
And that, as you're giving that example, I'm again going back to the personal life. You and family come over. I want to know the dietary choices for every individual. I'm not going to get an average of your family that 30% of your family is not allergic to peanuts.
Right.
No. I want to know if one person is allergic to peanuts, there's no peanuts that day. Okay. So that personal effort, as you're talking about, to get to know Aaron, is so important. I made a mistake. A gentleman was reporting to me, and I was between meetings, had to give him feedback. I followed rules. I did one-on-one, but I sent it on a Teams message one-on-one. Later on, when we talked, fortunately, we had a very good relationship. He explained to me his feelings were hurt. I sent it on Teams. Initially, I was being defensive by saying, hey, I did it one-on-one. I did not copy anybody. But then I realized, no, if his feelings are hurt, at least we have a connection where he's sharing it. And as I started talking to him, what I realized was instead of typing in Teams, if I even put the same thing in iMessage, he would have felt respected more.
Yep.
I'm like, wow, like knowing that was so important to me. Again, it was my mistake because he was ready for feedback.
Yeah, I'll give you a great example of that. When we're on social media and somebody's birthday or anniversary is happening, everybody is just commenting on the post. Hmm. I make an intention, if I know the person well, I go to their private message and say, happy birthday. I'll text them, happy birthday. Not on Facebook. I'll go to my phone because I want them to know this isn't just a quick reflex on a post. I want you to know I'm thinking about you at this time. And those little things can make a huge difference. I'll give you a great example of this. I was working with the US military. The room was full of leaders. And an admiral was speaking in front of the room right before me. And the admiral said, what is the most important trait of a great leader? And people started using words like loyalty, courage, strength. And he said, keep going. And the word was empathy. And what I love about that is when people think of the stereotype of a military leader, they think grit, they think, yeah, and it's empathy. And all the leaders agreed. Every leader I've met since, this was years ago. I was just doing a session with about 200 leaders a week ago. Four generals and admirals were in the room, right? And everybody I've met since then agrees with that phrase, that empathy is the greatest quality of a leader, because a great general or admiral will see a sailor or a marine or a soldier, an airman, walk by them and stop and go, how you doing? And look them in the eye and wait till that person answers. Which, think about how many CEOs do that in a company with 5,000 employees. Stop the employee and go, how's your day going today? And really look them in the eye, because that person matters to me. And great leaders, every person matters to them.
Yeah, and I like the second part of that. Like when you ask, you pause to hear the answer. Like so many times you and I are passing each other. I ask you, hey, how are you? Like I want to hear by default, great, as I'm 50% past you. Heavens forbid if you say, Arjun, not having a good day. I say, no, take two, come on. Like you need to feel good. Like I really think that point about the CEO or the admiral pausing, like think, I'm this tiny person in this army or organization. I'm going to text my wife by saying, guess what? The admiral today stopped and had a conversation. Like, if that doesn't empower me to go 500% beyond, I don't know what does.
Well, and here's the other beautiful part about it, because you just said something that I used to do all the time too, until very recently. And therapy helped me understand this actually. You said, hey, I want to make that person feel good in that moment. And I've learned it's okay to let them feel exactly what they're feeling. Because if I try to go, well, what do I need to make you feel good? They think there's something wrong with them now being honest with me about not feeling good, right? So instead, I want to say, how can I support you today? Wow. Right? I'm having a rough day. Well, let's make it a good day. Think about that versus how can I be of support to you?
This is huge, right? This is huge, because I think everything else was at 50, 80% for me, knowledge. This is a big breakthrough, because I feel humbled now. Because there are times I was acting like God. But I walk in and my job is to make you feel, wow, I can't. Let me first own up that I can't. So why try? On the other side, my role is to appreciate what you feel and at least let you share whether you're feeling happy, sad, something. And then I like the second part is, what can I do for you? What can I make it better? But acknowledging what you feel is the respect. Wow. So
yeah.
And it's smart if I hang out with you. So
I love how you brought that up, because I used to do this all the time. We take over, we're going to fix you, which is one of the most disrespectful things we can do to treat another person. that we somehow have so much brilliance or intelligence that we can make their life simpler with a phrase or a comment that they don't possess, right? Mm-hmm. It's a place of that we don't recognize, that it comes off as arrogance is what it comes off as, versus, mm-hmm. well, thank you so much for sharing that. You know, how can I, which, and here's the other half of it. It's not our responsibility to have everybody happy. And mm-hmm. that's what I had to learn. Oh, it's not my responsibility to make everybody perfect, to make everybody this. That's their life. Mm-hmm. And they have the responsibility of their feelings and their emotions. My thing is to support them on the journey. That's my thing. So yeah, there was a big breakthrough for me.
So when you're talking about words, this gives me a good transition. I'm going to put you on the spot. Based on everything you've done personally, professionally, what would be 2-3 words that you would choose to describe Mike?
So I read a great book years ago called The Unique Ability by Shannon Waller. It's part mm-hmm. of the Strategic Coach Program. Mm-hmm. And it has you go and do this. It has you ask people, how would you describe me? Clients, your family, your friends. And the words can surprise us often. Mm-hmm. And as you know, we're our worst critics. Even if you're somebody like you or I, who are known for being hyper, maybe high energy and positive, right? So people think that everything in here is positive. And we don't even recognize the little ways that we're negative because we think so positive, but they're there and they feed and they feed. And so the words that I had to really sit with and take in that I wouldn't have thought first, right? Was giving. Mm-hmm. In the last few years, I've really learned to own my intuition. Mm. So intuitive, giving, and I would go with passionate.
Okay. So I have a surprise for you. I asked a few people who we both know, and I went and asked them. First, I shared my excitement that I have a conversation with you, and I asked them to give me 2 or 3 words. These were the 4 concepts that people shared. And when I shared back with them, they all genuinely agree that, yes, this is it. The first one is genuinely caring. And the genuine was very important because fake caring is very dangerous. Okay. There's nothing worse than fake caring. So the genuine caring and the emphasis was there. This, I think, was an extension of that, but the second 2 words were always there. That always is a position of trust, which was really, really big. And I'm like, yes, because I just feel when people said that, I realized I send you a text about anything. There's always that kind, consistent, same person, always responding. Number 3 gets professional, is breakthrough. And what I wanted to understand is the phrase I was given back was there's nothing mediocre about this guy. You would not see him repackage information from a ChatGPT and 5 other books and give it to you. You sit with Mike, you'll be ready to get something breakthrough. You may not agree, but it is breakthrough. It is refreshing. Like you are not the restaurant that serves the same hamburger. You go, Mike's restaurant will do something breakthrough. And finally, the last word was inspiring. So genuinely caring, always there, breakthrough, and inspiring. And, you know, one of the reasons I do these podcasts is this gives me a chance to get to know people and to share back. Because when we run in our lives day to day, we don't get this chance to hear back. So it's really my honor and a pleasure to share these 4 things with you.
Well, thank you for it. It is a gift.
So now I want to go back to the corporate world. What you do has process, plan behind. So when you are done with a client and you're traveling back, what's the feeling that gets Mike excited? Like you're physically tired. What is it that Mike feels that's the smile on your face that gets you getting going the next day?
So that unique ability book I talked about, and what that does is help us see what drives us, what fires us. And mine is to create aha moments that reveal discoveries, right? So that could be with my family traveling, that could be work. So when I see the light bulb go off, and the room tells me an actual behavior they're going to change, I'm on cloud nine. So all my programs are built at the end for the room to share what they're going to use. Now, that for the room to experience that is not about me. It's about them hearing each other. Oh, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. And now we can support each other and everything we're going to do. But I get to walk away with the gift of all of that. So what fires me up is knowing the behaviors people are going to put into place in their life. And they're looking forward to it. It's not like, oh, I have to make this change. It's, oh, I can't wait to try this. I can't wait to do this. That's leading me for a few. When I walk up that stage, I'm ready for a few hours. I'm on a high because of knowing the behavioral changes that are taking place. That is the proof of the light bulb. If they just have a light bulb moment and go, oh my gosh, I never thought of that before, and don't change anything, that was a quick moment of inspiration or entertainment, but that's not life changing. What I love about it is their commitment to the behavior, right? You and I get to seed the field. They get to do everything with that seed after that. And so to hear them say, I want to grow and I want to fertilize that seed immediately. I want to get in there. I want to make that thing grow. That's what fires me up.
So Mike is the catalyst that makes me choose how I will change my behavior. But the choice is still mine. Like, you are giving me directions, reasons, motivation, path. But the empowerment happens within, and you're the catalyst. Love that.
Yeah, one of the things that that I've always loved, it came up in that research we talked about that was done on our organization, is they said that I was a safe provocateur. A safe provocateur. So when you're with us, you are going to get uncomfortable and you're going to feel very safe in the process of getting uncomfortable because the growth happens in discomfort and you're going to feel safe throughout the process. I love that combination. You're about to get uncomfortable. You're going to be safe in that uncomfortable. It's going to allow you to come out at a different place where you want to be.
That's an amazing concept, because to me, it's very powerful, because like, there could be good therapy or there could be bad therapy. Bad therapy is where defensive. Good therapy is where I'm being open, and together we are owning a better future. And I love that.
Yes.
So Mike, I want to go to, you know, bigger area of challenges in life. When you face bigger challenges, how do you address challenges? How do you face obstacles? What gets you going? Why do you, you know, what makes you not give up at that moment?
This answer probably depends on if I'm in my zone or not in my zone. If I'm in my zone, I'm in my unique ability, it's a gift of mine that I can face those with curiosity. That if somebody in my audience challenges me or questions what I'm doing, that I'm very, let's go. But not let's go like let's battle. Mm-hmm. Hey, that's interesting. Why do you think that? Right. Mm-hmm. And I want to learn where they're coming from to see if there's a crack in my belief or if there's a crack in theirs that we can reveal where it is either way, so we can grow from this and move on. So that's when I'm in my zone. If I'm not in my zone and I am overstressed or I'm overtired or I'm not in my best place, it usually starts with some form of defensiveness if I'm not in my best place. And then recognizing, wait a second, there was something there. There was some gold there that I'm getting too defensive about. And when you talk to people who are married, they do this all the time. If you were to give me advice, I'd be like, oh, let me check that out. If my spouse is likely to say the same thing, our first reaction might be like, well, that you're just being Debbie Downer. That's not going to work. Or you're going to be that type of thing. And then we step away from it. We're like, wait, that was a great, what? They actually had a good idea there. Why didn't I look at that? So sometimes, once again, what mood we're in, what mindset we're in. That doesn't mean we always do that to our spouse, but spouses will say, oh yeah, that happens a lot. If somebody else says it, we hear it. They say it, we don't hear it. And so the signs of a healthy relationship is acknowledging that, so we don't do that to each other, right? But I think that's really the key, is knowing what state of grace am I in. You know, it's easy to say, oh, I lead with curiosity, but is that honest? It is some of the time, it's not all the time.
And being aware of who we are and being human is very important.
Yes, exactly. Giving ourselves grace, because we're going to have the times we're not at our best. So sometimes adversity is going to sink us a little bit. And the question is, how do we come out of that? Now, I will say for me, there are some tools that I use that make a huge difference. I will notice that I am in a hyperarousal state, is a phrase that I've learned, and it sounds sexual, it's not. It means that your anxiety's up. And that typically happens when you're going from a high to a high to a high to a high. And even when there's spaces in there, you don't allow the space. You need a dopamine hit. You're on social media. So you're constantly up here. And so if I notice that I'm lacking stillness and mindfulness, if I'm struggling to meditate, this is a massive red flag. Like if I sit down and go, oh, I just can't, so I'm going to do something else. Red flag. That's when I most need to be in stillness for 20 minutes. So meditation, quiet, stillness is huge. So that's one thing that I will look to. Journaling can be massively powerful to help me out of the negative back to having the right perspective. And therapy is huge for me. I'm a big believer of it. I came into it way late in life. I think it would have been a great gift to have for 20 years, not two. So I'm a big believer in that. Now, I'm not somebody that when something comes up, you call a therapist. I have my appointment a week out, but it gives me something to look forward to and to share with this objective mind that for me is the right therapist. Because you brought up earlier, there's bad therapy, good therapy. Somebody who explores with me, who removes those shame and guilt we beat ourselves up with to help us get out of this and go, you know, here's somebody simply go, well, that's been a rough week. And you didn't see it that way. And you're like, oh, it has, hasn't it? No wonder why I'm wiped out, right? Just to pause like that and go, who wouldn't be wiped out with what I just described? So why don't you take an off day and let yourself reboot, or 2 days or 3 days, and resetting to where we need to be.
Yeah, that's amazing. So taking this conversation tangentially to a totally different planet. At the end of this conversation, you go to your email and you get an invite. The invite is about an event. This event will have three people. 18-year-old Mike today, and 100-year-old Mike. Your job is to plan the event and choose a location. So I have two questions for you. Question one, where would this amazing meeting or gathering of these three Mikes happen? And secondly, what would be the one thing each of those Mikes, Mike 18, Mike today, and Mike 100 will say when they walk in?
So it is going to be in a warm water ocean location on an island overlooking the ocean that has the ability to both scuba dive and snorkel. That's the first. I can answer that in once. That is my place.
Awesome.
And all of them would enjoy that. All of them would enjoy that. So that's where it will be. What's the one thing each of them will say?
Yes, please.
The 18-year-old Mike is going to come up with just a fireball of passion and energy. Just do what you believe in. Do it all. Do everything you can as quick as you can. Somebody gives you an idea, do that now. If they've succeeded, follow their path, do it. That's what got me my success. That's how 18-year-old Mike's going to talk, right? Current Mike is going to say, do less better. Don't pound yourself into doing everything to get it all right. Do less better. Do less and do it so well that you don't have to do the other stuff. So one of the things that I believe as a speaker in any company, when you create a great service or a great product that truly serves, the other things about how much social media or how many books I have or how many of these sort of ego trips we can get caught in up in the business models don't matter. Because great service gets talked about. A great speech gets talked about. A great product gets talked about. Just keep making it better and enjoy it. If you enjoy that process, live in that process and take the weight off your shoulders of everything else. 100-year-old Mike, I think, is going to be saying, continue to find the vibrancy in a way that leaves room for rest. Wow. And I think that's going to be the key, is still be that child with the ability to also give yourself a rest for that child to be at its best. Kids took naps. I think the circle of life is coming back to being that child who took naps as we age.
Mike, this was or is an amazing conversation, which I'll cherish, really appreciate. Two final thoughts. One, anything else you want to share? And secondly, You answered every question, somewhere goofy, somewhere strange, that I threw at you. If you have any questions for me, I would love to answer to you.
Okay, excellent. Well, I'll start with that. I'll start with a question for you. What do you think has been an essential belief that you've held to through your adversities and your struggles and your challenges? Because I find you, I mean, I know your personal history. I know your background because of our time together. And you have faced some serious challenges. And yet you still come out as who you are, that positive soul.
I think it's addiction to life. Okay. What I realized is anytime I faced any challenge, life is never cruel. Life has always thrown a Sherpa at me who shows up with open arms. During divorce days, when the life, I was very lonely, it was my handyman who at 2:30 a.m. would come in, sit next to my bed with a beer. And the moment I opened my eyes, this guy, his English was a little weak, but he would say, "Mr. Arjun, you're not dead," which meant he was happy I was alive and he cared about me. Okay. And that has really got me to finally trust. It took me a while to trust life. Like now I know if life throws an adversity, life has found a bigger Sherpa for me. All I need to do is say, "Hey guys, Mike, can you move? Meredith, you know, all of you, can you move?" Because that Sherpa is there in the room. And that Sherpa is competent to get me out of this challenge. That Sherpa has the biggest heart ever and the biggest hug. All I need to do is go and jump into that Sherpa. So life has become this game where I can really say, not because of my skills, I'm frail, but because of the Sherpa, I can tell life, bring it on. That is very exciting.
Thank you for sharing that. That's a beautiful concept and visual.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So Mike, this has been a great conversation. Truly appreciate you sharing, truly appreciate your friendship. And most importantly, truly appreciate you waking up every morning thinking what you can give rest of us. You are a Sherpa and Sherpas like you make our lives better. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Arjun. I so appreciate that. I said, I always enjoy getting to talk with you. And I love that you put together such a wonderful podcast that goes so deep.
Thank you, sir.
You've been listening to Secrets to Win Big with Arjun Sen, founder and CEO of Zen Mango, top brand growth driver and a former Fortune 500 executive who has been called one of the most marketing intelligent minds in the business. To learn more, visit www.zenmango.com. Share this podcast with your friends and subscribe wherever you like to listen to podcasts. This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.